Hello and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. We are recording this on April 14th, 2020. My name is Fanboy and I'm joined with Alex.
Hello.
And Kyle.
Hello.
And we are still under quarantine, I hope, or I should say we're still under stay-at-home orders. I hope everyone's staying home and staying safe. We thought last time we talked that we had the whole Disney release schedule down, but it turns out we were wrong. And Disney announced some more changes to the release schedule, namely that what we thought was going to be the first film to come out from Disney was Soul, which was scheduled to be June 19th, 2020. It's now going to be released on November 20th, 2020. Raya and the Last Dragon, which had that spot, which is a Disney animated film, moves to March 12th, 2021. And then there was an untitled Disney live action film, which it doesn't mean there was actually a film planned for then, just they had a release date. But now they are saying, nope, that is going to be Raya and the Last Dragon. So this effectively makes Mulan the next Disney film to be released when it comes out July 24th, assuming that happens. Still without release dates are The Woman in the Window, The New Mutants from 20th Century, and The Personal History of David Copperfield and Antlers from Searchlight. So I will say, Kyle, you get kudos. You predicted this, perhaps not the boldest prediction in the world, but you saw the writing on the wall for this one.
Yeah. Not exactly surprising, but probably the right move, especially because you don't want to screw over Pixar twice in one year, be the last movie out and the first one back.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that all worked out. Two original Pixar films. You know, people would definitely have said, is Pixar being challenged with original ideas and stuff? And obviously, neither Onward or Soul would have had typical release experiences. Puts Mulan kind of in as the coming out party for Disney. Obviously things could still change. I don't want to speculate what the world will look like in July, but at least Soul is moved to a date where it can probably get a little bit more attention. I was, you know, typically for a Pixar film, Alex will go to Pixar a couple months beforehand and, you know, get a little overview of the film, talk to some of the creative team. And it became clear that that just wasn't going to happen this time because in, you know, the month that between the film's release, basically, and the end of our stay-at-home orders, it just didn't seem feasible. And now, you know, it can have that sort of experience in the future.
In the future.
In the future, our packages will be delivered at the speed of light. Any thoughts, Alex, on the release date shuffle?
It's funny because I just finished editing and we published our last podcast where I basically said, I don't see why this has to happen. Because there were headlines that Pixar was being very productive during this time frame. So I'm wondering, you know, how much are they able to do from home? Is it going to be the case where they're, you know, sitting on the finished films of Soul and Raya for all these extra months, just waiting to space them out a little bit. But I mean, it is what it is. I don't have a firm opinion. I think it really just cements the fact that things won't be back to normal by end of June when Soul was originally scheduled to come out for movie going audiences, for starters. And I think for Disney park goers, for obvious reasons, extending off of that.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to talk about what the theme parks are going to look like after this. We have a little bit of an idea of when that's going to happen. But you've definitely seen the conversation around coming out of this just evolve as this whole situation has evolved. You know, from 2 weeks to 3 weeks to another month to, you know, we're still going to have to do some stuff for a long while. And you know, I'm sort of over speculating at this point because it's pointless. But you know, there's going to be two sides of it. What is allowed, and perhaps what is even right, versus what people feel, and those I'm guessing will not match up very well. Speaking of people, Bob Iger was recently resigned as CEO, became executive chairman. Bob Chapek became CEO. And that's all the same. Bob Chapek is still the CEO of the Walt Disney Company. But there was a New York Times report, and I don't want to give it too much weight than it deserves, but they basically said that Bob Iger has kind of taken over the reins again, kind of showed his dominance. Basically, you know, the role that Bob Iger was supposed to have was he was going to be focused on the creative, and then Bob Chapek was going to be focused on the day-to-day. And obviously, managing coronavirus is more of a day-to-day thing than a big creative vision. But obviously, Bob, you know, with the experience, is taking a leading role in that. As you would expect when you just left the company, not even left the company, when you get promoted essentially out of that sphere, you would expect your successor to ask you questions when you're barely a month in, and your successor has yet to be named. I don't know why this is shocking to people. It seems sort of obvious, but you know, I think people are curious as to who's making the coronavirus decisions. Is it Bob Iger, Bob Chapek? And functionally, it's probably both of them. And I think that sort of, you know, that's going to ebb and flow as natural as the conversation continues. Kyle, you got anything? Any thoughts on this?
I think, you know, kind of like we discussed when we got the news about Chapek ascending, that there's a lot of people in what they call Diz Twitter that dislike him. And so a lot of them were very quick to jump on this and, you know, laugh at it and think that it meant that Chapek was failing. I even had a friend text me a few minutes later and be like, oh, do you think this means that Chapek's going to be removed? I'm like, no. I mean, I don't think that that's a complete impossibility, but I also don't think that this has anything to do with that. Like, oh yeah, yeah, they're going to remove him because he couldn't handle an unprecedented crisis during his training period a month into his tenure when his boss is still, you know, this is meant to be a training period.
Right.
Like, that's why Iger is here. And so it's not like Iger's going to just kick up his feet and be like, it's all you, bro. Like, what do you think?
And no one is viewing the fact that Disney is challenged as an effect of Bob Chapek's leadership. I mean, that has a brain, right? Like, the fact that the parks can't open is not Bob Chapek's fault. The fact that they can't release movies is not Bob Chapek's fault. The fact that ESPN has nothing to show is not Bob Chapek's fault. The fact that who knows what television is going to look like because they're going to run out of shows to air, it's not Bob Chapek's fault. Now, you could talk about how he's navigating these waters, but how do you judge that? Well, yeah, there's no way to compare what the other options are, right? The only thing that I think Bob Chapek could do is, you know, make Bob Iger and the board lose confidence in him, but there's nothing to indicate that that's even close to happening. I don't think everyone's seeing the drop in the stock price and blaming this on Bob Chapek. That would just be ridiculous. Alex?
I mean, you guys, I think, said all that, you know, I feel about it. It's poor timing for Bob Chapek that yeah. The world gets turned upside down just, you know, moments after he's supposed to be, you know, earning his ears to take over this role. Does he get an earning his ears little ribbon on his name tag?
I don't think he wears his like name tag as CEO functions like that. Like, I don't think he goes into the board meetings and it's like,
It's a first name company. It's a name tag thing. He was in parks. So I feel like he should always have his name tag over his heart. And I feel like he should have his earning his ears ribbon on during this whole entire period. It would make me smile. So, it's all unfortunate for him. I didn't read the New York Times article because you fanboy told me that, you know, it just kind of seemed like they were blowing it into a bigger deal than it had any right to be. And I don't usually like to give clicks to anything like that. But I mean, it's interesting. My personal opinions of him, because I've been following his career for like 20 years now, but you know, all that aside, I think he's really in a tricky position, and I kind of feel bad for him. I hope he is at least getting to kind of shadow and learn from Bob Iger in this time. Like, I get the reins are in Iger's hands, but I hope Chapek is in the passenger seat next to him, kind of getting to learn what would you do in this kind of a situation.
My concern with the article is that it relied a lot on sources, you know, unnamed sources, that anytime you see an unnamed source, they're doing it for a reason. They're not doing it for, you know, just the truth needs to be out there, because it doesn't in this case. And it came across like it was trying to undermine Bob Chapek, and that there were people in the organization, through who knows what reason, that just wanted to kind of slight Bob Chapek a little bit. And because there was no news there, and it became a thing just because, you know, obviously anytime Bob Iger talks about what's going on at Disney, that is news inherently. And because he responded, it's newsworthy, because Bob, especially in challenging times, you hang on to those folks in leadership's words to get guidance as to what is happening. But it just screamed like the only reason that this piece existed was to take Bob Chapek down a peg. I can't conceive why it was written for any other reason.
Yeah.
So on to much more frivolous things. Kyle watched supposedly parts of the latest...
As I do.
The latest installment of the Bachelor franchise called Listen to Your Heart. Now, this is not normally something we would talk about, but at this point, we will hang on to any piece of content that's new and original from the Walt Disney Company. So, Kyle, take it away.
So, you know, first of all, I don't watch a lot of Bachelor or Bachelorette. I've only seen in the past couple of seasons bits and pieces, like as we're getting ready to go do more important things, or we've also watched recaps of them on Ellen's YouTube channel. She has a show where a couple of her staff members recap the episodes. But I caught the end part of Listen to Your Heart after seeing those stupid commercials for a month now.
Listen to your heart.
It's no fun singing love songs when you're not in love. and it is as ridiculous as those commercials. Like, it's as crazy as The Bachelor, but then maybe like five times as cheesy. So the weirdest part to me was there was a scene where either, because it's kind of like Bachelor in Paradise rules, where first the women will be handing out, there's 12 guys and 8 women, and so the women are going to be handing out roses to 8 people, and 4 of them are going to have to go home. So they're all trying to,
apparently you know Bachelor in Paradise rules.
I think those are Bachelor in Paradise rules. I don't even actually know. So everyone's trying to schmooze and figure out who they're going to get a rose from. And there's a guy and a girl sitting out on the steps, and the guy's like, well, obviously we're attracted to each other. There's no question about that. And the girl's like, yeah. And then they start making out. And then this other guy comes out and he's like, hey, sorry to interrupt, but can I talk to you for a minute? And then she goes with him, and he's like, I started writing this song and I realized I think it's about you, and I'd like you to help me finish it. And he, you know, plays verse chorus on his guitar. And then she's like, that was so amazing. And then she starts making out with him. I'm like, what is happening right now? This is the stupidest thing. So yeah, it was ridiculous. And I love it. And I can't wait to get to that stupid line that they've been showing all over and over.
That didn't happen in the first episode?
I mean, it's possible I missed it, but I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't think that happened. And they haven't even got to like the competition part of it yet. I mean, like the song competition part or the singing thing.
Would you say things are just now heating up?
Oh, I think so. But yeah, it's like, it was like a literal musical. Like, oh, how do I win this girl over? Let me take out my guitar. It was like watching Camp Rock, actually. Like, everyone's like introducing me or whatever that song is.
This That's is me. This is me.
Yeah, one of the... No, is that the one?
I'm too cool to know you. Sorry, I'm a Camp Rock fan.
I was thinking of the one that Nick Jonas sings about, like,
I gotta she smells like her. Feet
when the moon looks like a toenail.
I don't remember that song. I have just sang all the songs from Camp Rock.
It's Camp Rock 2.
Oh, Rock the final 2. Jam was nowhere near as good as the first jam.
But yeah, it's crazy.
Rebecca, who is our Bachelor expert, also really enjoyed the show. So I take that for what it's worth.
She's been sending me little tidbits. Like, the first rule of reality shows is the person that says they're not there for the drama is the one causing all the drama.
The second rule of The Bachelor is...
The second rule is that the recap shows on the internet are better than the show itself.
Awesome.
So, speaking of drama, you may have heard that Disney was going to be broadcasting their Celebrating 25 Magical Years of Disney on Broadway concert with some new introductions from the guy from Liv and Maddie.
I got to take a pause because you said this is drama, but then you said this is Broadway drama, and I want to make it clear that there's normal drama and then there's drama.
Thank you, Marshall. They were going to broadcast a show with the guy from Liv and Maddie, kind of interviewing people throughout it. Well, so it turns out that SAG-AFTRA and Actors Equity all approved for this broadcast because it was being for charity for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS COVID-19 Emergency Assistance Fund. Well, then the American Federation of Musicians said, nope, we want to get paid. So what happened was, so this concert was, you know, originally a charity event in real life where everyone got paid. But then they went back and said, we'd like to broadcast it. Were you willing to waive your fees? Everyone said yes, except the musician union, and said, we, you know, this is a time when we need all the money we can get. You know, how dare you ask us to do something for free? Even though they basically agreed, the Broadway Cares organization agreed to pay the union with donations, basically, that would have exceeded what they would have paid the musicians. And they said, nope, we want our musicians to get paid. Then the musicians that actually would have gotten paid said, no, we're good. We want this to happen, and did a change.org petition. And then eventually the American Federation of Musicians kind of retreated because I think they saw the writing on the wall. So it got delayed basically like a work week. It was supposed to be April 13th. It's now going to be April 17th. And the whole thing is just ridiculous.
Well, the real tragedy is now that I think with the rescheduling, it's going to air the same time as the That Thing You Do watch party from the Oneaters. So
there's a lot going on that night, by the way. I'm going to cover in just a minute, but there's like five live stream tweet event Disney things that I'll get into it, but you'll have choices. And it's funny because when they announced the cancellation, they were like, oh, you can still donate. And I'm like, I'm not going to donate just out of principle that this is ridiculous and y'all can figure it out. I will still donate the money I would donate, but not to help musicians who can't play nice with everyone else. Turns out it wasn't the musicians that wasn't playing nice. It was just their union. And it's just a whole mess.
Did you see I saw some big names sharing it. Most notably, Michael Giacchino was tweeting out the petition and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, everything about it, because I've read quite a few stories on this. The guy who's in charge of the American Federation of Musicians Union just sounds like he wanted to prove a point. I mean, his name, his quotes in all of these articles just make him sound so pompous, and like he doesn't have the right mindset to be leading an organization like this. I'm curious if we won't see him announce like a resignation or he's stepping down or anything like that in the near future. His name's Ray Hare. And also the thing about it that, I mean, I understand, what do they call them? Royalties, Kyle?
Yeah, I guess these would be royalties.
So essentially these are royalties. This was a filmed performance. When they did the fundraising performance, I think Disney said the total production cost about $20,000 to produce. They put up the money to host it at Disney's New Amsterdam Theater in New York. A lot of the talent was Disney paid on Broadway performers and musicians and all of the back of house work that goes on in a theater production. So everyone got paid to do the job that night, but because this was a film performance, there's, you know, royalties that go along with it. So this was once again going to be screened through a live stream for charity. The other unions all said, sure, fine, the money's going to go to charity. We approve. And then this one guy, was it that it only represented about 20 people in the total production? I think I'd read that, Fanboy.
Probably. I mean, it's just the orchestra.
It's just the orchestra. And so had this huge sticking point. And it's crazy that Broadway Cares offered more money to be donated to the union than the individual performers would have received in a royalty check, because I've heard, you know, drastically different things about royalty checks depending on your star power. I imagine as a musician, it's probably a really small check that you were going to receive from this. But like, you know, like the Friends, I think had a pretty famously high royalty amount for Friends reruns that would run in syndication. But prior to that, like, you know, you'd hear stories about someone who did, you know, sitcoms years ago, maybe was in an episode or two, and every couple months they get a check for like $2. And so sometimes those royalty checks can be really, really small. So I'm curious to see what the figures are of what he was really, you know, sticking to his ground for over this. But all seems absurd, and he just looks like a jerk coming out of it.
It's funny you mention about royalties. I have a friend who just does voiceover for a few different things, and he was on Fish Hooks on a few episodes. And so I told him, I'm like, oh, hey, I saw that's going to be added to Disney Plus either last month or whatever. He's like, oh, cool. I wonder if that'll affect my royalty checks. So who knows? I hope it does.
I'm curious to see, because I know with streaming rights, you know, shows produced before a certain time frame, the royalty language didn't count for it. So, you know, depending on when the show was produced, the actors either do or don't get a royalty check off of a streaming package deal. And usually the royalty
after the strike.
Yeah.
And that strike was. So,
and my understanding is with a streaming royalty, it's more like a percentage of the fee that the studio got for the streaming rights, which with Disney owning their own streaming service, I'm curious, you know, how much are they required to pay out? Obviously, with 50 million subscribers, does it become a percentage of profits off Disney Plus?
So the residuals are actually have to be calculated on a fair market value. So they figure out a number of if Disney sold it to another party, like a Netflix, what the residuals would be for that. Because that was actually part of the big negotiation, was if it's happening internally, like how do they know what to pay these people? And that's why a lot of shows like Netflix does this, and Disney's trying to go that route, will basically buy out the residuals, so give them more money up front. And that, so that they don't have to worry about this stuff later on, and it doesn't become a barrier. Because, you know, if you ever wondered why is my show that I love not on anything, it's because it probably doesn't pay to deal with all the residual stuff for, you know, the small value it adds to a service.
I know, like, Muppet Show fans, you know, Disney only put out the first three seasons on DVD. They had announced the fourth season, even put out, you know, DVD cover art, and then it never actually hit shelves. And I remember hearing that, like, Muppet Show and Saturday Night Live had two of the most complicated rights packages to try and, you know, resell it either on DVD or in streaming. Senate Live seems to have gotten around it by removing a lot of the musical performances from a lot of the old episodes. You can find pretty much every episode on Hulu, and I'm sure they'll be transferring over to Peacock. But they don't include the musical performances, even for newer episodes, because that's a whole different set of rights that you have to deal with.
Yeah, the music makes it super complicated.
And I mean, Muppet Show is very music-driven, and they had lots of, you know, musical guests who would just pop in and sing a song with the Muppets.
Well, you know, we just watched the D23 put up the Goofy Movie panel from the D23 Expo, but they couldn't do the eye-to-eye finale because that's a song, and then it becomes a thing.
On Disney Plus, some of the songs are changed in some episodes, like of Even Stevens and Lizzie McGuire and stuff, because when they originally licensed those, it was just for broadcast and not for streaming. And so then they had to relicense them, and that's where it gets expensive. So,
well, and I think one of the most famous cases of that is 16 Candles in the Breakfast Club. Do you know about that?
No.
So 16 Candles in the Breakfast Club, when you saw them in theaters in the 80s, had a almost completely different soundtrack than when they came out on VHS. And so in the DVD era, they put out DVDs and they, like, Universal was really excited. We've got the original music soundtrack on both films. And then a lot of fans, like, got angry and they were like, this isn't the movie I know. These aren't the songs I love. And it was because so many people knew the VHS version. And so then when they re-put them out on DVD and I think on Blu-ray, they gave people the option of both soundtracks, but Universal went back and, like, paid to have the original music put in, only to have a lot of people upset that they weren't getting the songs that they remembered from both of those films. Breakfast Club obviously retained the Don't You Forget About Me song that it was famous for on VHS, but pretty much all the other songs in that and 16 Candles were different songs on VHS than they were in theaters. And I think it was because they were produced in that era when it was like, maybe this will or won't go to VHS, so let's not pay for that when we put it in theaters.
Yeah, I know that Wonder Years had a lot of hangups for many years because it used a lot of 60s pop songs and stuff, and so
yeah,
it was going to be expensive. But then on the other hand, your story about the releases made me think of one of my favorite movies is Empire Records, and probably about 15 or 20 years ago now, they put out a DVD called the Remix Edition where it had, like, bonus scenes and stuff edited in, and at the time it was like, oh, awesome, I'm excited to see that. And then that was the only one you could get. And you're like, oh no, I don't want this anymore. I want the real one. So thankfully, like, if you look on Amazon, you'll see people like, is this the real version? Because it's got, like, the blue cover, like the remix edition, and people are very confused.
Wow. Well, and speaking of, you know, edited films, and also we mentioned the Oneaters getting back together. A lot of people may forget that That Thing You Do was a Fox film, so that is now a Disney film. But there is an extended version of That Thing You Do. And if you buy that version digitally and on Blu-ray, you get the theatrical cut along with it, so you don't have to worry if you don't like all the extra stuff that was put in. But you can kind of have both at the same time.
And also, both that and Empire Records star Liv Tyler and Ethan Embry.
Ah. Did Tom Hanks have anything to do creatively with Empire Records?
Not that I know of, no.
That was where I first... I don't know if it was Liv Tyler's first film, but I remember that's when I found out that Steven Tyler had a daughter and that she was beautiful. To everyone's surprise.
The Aerosmith videos?
Well, and I knew Alicia Silverstone was in the Aerosmith videos, but I'd never paid attention to who the brunette was. So then all of a sudden when Empire Records came out and her name started, you know, becoming repeated places, and they were like, Steven Tyler's daughter, Liv Tyler. I was like, whoa, that came from that.
Wow.
That reminds me of that, that commercial that's on all the time. I think it was is it Allstate? With the mayhem, and it's got Tina Fey, and she's like, how did you make somebody I love?
Oh, yes. I love that. Well, and the actor who plays the mayhem guy, I cannot remember his real name, but he played her ex-boyfriend on 30 Rock. So it's that. I love that ad. I have to say, I think it's hilarious that more than half the ads I see on TV right now are for car insurance. Because nobody's driving.
Well, they're also giving rebates. You should check with your provider.
Right.
Might get 15% back or more.
So they're paying, you know, whatever it costs nowadays to advertise on TV for the car that you're taking maybe 10 minutes away from your house once a week and back if you're properly following shelter in place rules.
Although I thought you were going to say all the advertisements are for prescription drugs, because my wife's actually been making a running list of all the different drugs she sees advertised.
That's true too. And the side effects are more scary than the problem they were designed to treat.
My favorite thing about those is they always say, don't take this drug if you're allergic to this drug.
Oh, like, yes. Well, don't take Cialis if you're allergic to Cialis. Great.
You were straight to Cialis, huh?
Sound advice.
Apparently Disney had no problem getting the rights to some of their own music, because they announced a 1-hour special that's airing Thursday, April 16th, thanks to the fact that Grey's Anatomy had to wrap up production early, called the Disney Family Sing-Along, where they will have various people of celebrity type, and they will sing along with you from their homes. So the lineup is A Dream Is a Wish Your Heart Make with A Dream Is a Wish Your Heart Makes with Demi Lovato and Michael Bublé, A Spoonful of Sugar by Little Big Town, Be Our Guest with however you pronounce, the Dancer with the Star guy, Haley Herbert with a special appearance by Julianne Hough, Can You Feel the Love Tonight by Disney legend Christina Aguilera, Colors of the Wind, Tori Kelly, Do You Want to Build a Snowman with Thomas Rhett, Friend Like Me with James Monroe Iglehart and the Broadway Company of Aladdin, Gaston with Josh Gad, Luke Evans, and Alan Menken? Just kidding. Alan Menken. How Far I'll Go with Ali'i Cuevallo, I Won't Say I'm in Love with Ariana Grande, I Want to Be Like You with Darren Criss, I'll Make a Man Out of You with Donny Osmond, It's a Small World by LP fan John Stamos, Let It Go with Amber Riley, The Bare Necessities with Aaron Andrews, Bobby Bones, Carrie Ann Inaba, and Marcus Scribner, Under the Sea with Disney staple Jordan Fisher, and You've Got a Friend in Me with Josh Groban. With the big,
I like how Jordan Fisher is the Disney staple, as if all of these people aren't Disney staples at this point.
But Jordan Fisher is like,
it's like Disney's Jordan Fisher,
right? Like name a Disney event that you've attended in the last 2 years where Jordan Fisher didn't have some sort of presence.
And I mean, he's even in Disney's Hamilton. Well, not actively, but he's meant to be in Disney's Hamilton. And they loaned him out for the Domino's ad.
The big finale is a We're All in This Together performance of Kenny Ortega and friends from High School Musical, Descendants, High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, Zombies, and more, doing something crazy. It's a lot of people. But it's got Vanessa Hudgens, Ashley Tisdale, Corbin Bleu, Monique Coleman, Lucas Grabeel, Raven Simone, Dove Cameron, Sophia Carson, Boo Boo Stewart, so on and so forth.
Zefron has, I just saw, been added.
Oh, so you can get some abs if you're all in this together.
So is this, I have a question about this. Is everybody singing from the comfort of their home through Zoom?
I don't know what they're using. Something like that.
I would hope that they're recording locally and then sending the file.
And then you mentioned Derek Hough with special appearance by Julianne Hough. Is it that she accidentally walked by eating potato chips in the background?
I don't know. Yes.
That's what I want to see. I would tune in for that.
This is why this is must-see television. I mean, granted, everything at this point is must-see television. But
here's a bold prediction. This is going to be bad.
Oh, there's no doubt. But, you know, what else are you going to do?
I'm going to watch this.
Oh, well, we kind of have to, but yes. You know, just to support John Stamos, if nothing else.
Yeah. Our favorite reader of A Kiss Goodnight.
Okay. The fact that he picked that one is just says all you need to know about John Stamos.
Mm-hmm. He's a true fan.
There is no doubt they didn't send him that book. Like, he had that book on his shelf.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some people where you watch their story time with YouTube videos and you're like, okay, weeks ahead, Disney, you know, or someone at Disney bought this on Amazon, overnighted it to you, so you could read 5-minute Easter stories. You didn't have that in your personal collection. But some of them, like Chewbacca, what's his name? Jonas? Yes. Jonas?
Good enough.
You know, he's reading Chewie and the Porgs. I know he has a baby. I don't doubt that he owned a copy of Chewie and the Porgs. I 100% believe John Stamos pulled his own copy of A Kiss Goodnight off the shelf, that he has loaded the song sung by Ashley Brown from the CD that was included into his Apple Music account. And he has that in his Disney playlist as like the last song. That's him. And so I think that's really fun. It is fun to see like who they're choosing and what they're reading. The biggest shock of all was Paige O'Hara reading a Beauty and the Beast story, the animated version.
Yeah, I was wondering what franchise she would pick from, and she picked Beauty and the Beast. Kind of bold.
I'm waiting for Jodie Benson's because it seems inevitable.
She's gonna pick something from like the Barbie catalog.
Ooh, I would be there for it. Oh, Jodie Benson reads the Barbie catalog.
Yeah. So, as you can see, there's a lot of Disney from home happening. I just want to cover some of it. First of all, if you have children of school age, Nat Geo has some great resources out there, Nat Geo at Home webpage. They also do daily live streams with an explorer or something of similar ilk every day at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 Pacific, which is a lot of fun. But also, I'm going to cover some of these other things. FX on Hulu is doing watch parties. The first episode of Mrs. America on Wednesday, April 15th at 9 p.m. The season 2 premiere of What We Do in the Shadows at Saturday, April 19th at 2 p.m. Eastern. American Horror Story, the first episode of the first season called Murder House, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And they're going to do a fan favorite episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on April 20th, 9 p.m. Eastern. And I just started watching that show because it's now Disney. Alex has watched it forever. It is shocking.
Hilariously
incredibly
so.
Incredibly inappropriate.
Hilariously so.
It is hilarious.
I mean,
don't do that with the family, though.
No. It's TV MAL. But what I love about it is most
TV Mal. The cameras.
TV Mal. Most shows, you know, you watch a character go through an evolution. You know, they change in positive ways. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, they devolve. Like, they get worse as it goes. And it's so funny. It's so inappropriate. I mean, kind of like South Park. Nothing is really off limits in terms of what they will and won't do. So if you're easily offended, it's not for you. But otherwise, I mean, if you just want to see a show about the worst people that ever lived and they do not, you know, succeed in any of their goals, it's a fun show. I recommend it.
We also, Marvel's doing some live streams, including April 15th at 3 p.m. Eastern, Marvel Let's Play with Marvel Spider-Man. That's basically where they play Marvel Spider-Man for the PlayStation. On Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern, they're doing something called A Day at the Sanctum Sanctorum. I don't know what that is. But then they have another live stream at 1:30, which is an interview with Rainbow Rowell, comic author. And then Friday, April 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern is X-Men, the animated series Watch Along. So you can watch it on Disney Plus and just watch along. Do we not just cover music rights and how like now that's going to cost us $8 billion?
Well, it's not anyone's original recording. And isn't there a rule like if it's less than 20 seconds, it's okay?
No, that's a myth.
Well, I feel like that's fact.
Oh, did you hear that they're making a remake of that show?
A remake of X-Men, the animated series?
Yeah, because they added some X-Men icons to Disney Plus. So the only possible extension of that is that they're making a remake.
There have been, by the way, multiple X-Men animated series since then that nobody remembers because that one was so great that they never needed to touch it again.
So I was listening to an ESPN podcast where they interviewed John Tesh, and basically John, they were like, oh, we want to play the song, but we can't afford it. So they were like humming it along. John Tesh was like, I own the rights. You guys can play it. And so they just constantly played Round Ball Rock. John Tesh didn't give us permission. Like constantly playing like anytime they would just like the conversation would lull up, like play it, and they would play Round Ball Rock.
I have a question about music rights, and I know you guys are both subject matter experts. So
SMEs, as they call it.
SMEs. A musician can perform a song that isn't theirs live at their concert without having permission because it's a live performance and it's not being, you know, packaged or sold. If they recorded their cover of Let It Be, they have to, you know, get John Lennon's permission if they wanted to release and sell that. But to perform a cover of Let It Be in a bar, you don't have to pay John Lennon. So if I, on this podcast, which we are not currently sponsored and we're not using their recording, is this considered a live performance? Am I within?
No, because it's recorded.
But it's not sold. We're not selling the podcast.
Don't bars and stuff still have to pay like ASCAP fees?
Yeah, they still pay ASCAP and BMI.
Just generically, like, in
Disney
general?
Disney pays for playing the BGM.
Right, I know Disney pays for playing the BGM because that's playing pre-recorded material publicly. That's like the whole lingo in the FBI anti-piracy warning. You have to pay for any public exhibition. This wouldn't be a public exhibition of a recording. It's my live performance.
I don't know that they don't have to pay for a live performance if you're using someone else's music.
I'm pretty sure that, like,
I mean, I'm not a rights expert, but like, I know if you do a musical, you have to pay for the music.
Yes, but that is different. You're putting on a paid musical that contains that song that it was, you know, part of the plan all along. If you're, you know, a musician taking requests and someone requests a Bruno Mars song, you don't have to say, hold on a minute, and make a call and see if you have the right to perform that song.
Well, because I don't think they do it on a rights level. I mean, they just play a flat fee. Like, you don't have to get the author's permission. You just pay ASCAP and BMI.
I'm so confused.
Anyway, there is one other Disney group. Well, kind of Disney group. The Walt Disney Family Museum is doing virtual presentations with people associated with Disney somehow. So the first one is the 15th, which probably have already happened by the time you hear this, Bob Gurr, Disney legend. On Friday, April 17th, is Muppet performer Dave Goles, who I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Wednesday, April 22nd, you get Brenda Chapman and Kevin Lima, twofer. And Friday, April 24th, is composer Fabrizio Mancinelli, who discusses his process for composing films and the inspiration that Walt has given him. So there's just a lot to do from home. I know we would all love to not be at home, but alas, here we are. Okay, guys. Alex, got anything to talk about?
Well, just today, there was some news about American Idol. To kind of recap, they sent everybody home, all the contestants, and basically said this season is on pause. They've now said that they're picking it back up, but the judges will be from the comfort and safety of their own home, and the performers will be from the comfort and safety of their own home. I'd love to see how Ryan Seacrest hosts this. But that's going to be, for the time being, what American Idol looks like. And I'm hoping we get to see some performers, dogs, and cats.
Yeah, this should be very interesting. I don't know, because it's still supposedly live, which could go terribly wrong. Even SNL, when they did their thing, was not live.
Right. So. Yeah, that was interesting. Saturday Night Live did a whole episode with everyone from their own homes, which had some really great moments and some really awkward moments. But none of it was actually live, because that would have been way too complicated. Also, it seemed like they were spread all across the country with what's his name, Scarlett Johansson's husband, in the nicest living room I've ever seen.
You know, you mentioned Seacrest, and I think I heard something like only 1/3 of Americans have jobs that they can do from home, but unfortunately 1/3 of those are made up by Seacrest, so.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
Oh, have you tried to watch Live of Regis and Kelly or whatever it's called now?
In the background.
I've seen it
a couple of times, and Kelly just looks so nonplussed.
I watched the first episode, like maybe the first 15 minutes, which is, of course, not the best one to watch. And it was rough. I mean, you know that there's nothing they can do. I mean, it is what it is. But all these folks are running to like produce things from home. Maybe a rerun's okay.
Yeah, Kelly Clarkson's been doing intros, and I think she's producing one show a week completely remotely, but otherwise she's just been doing like little video intros. And then the first week they did it, they didn't really do much about it, but now when you watch, they have like a previously recorded banner pop up like every 5 minutes to be like, don't hate us.
Kyle, you got anything else you want to talk about?
The Kelly Clarkson show, apparently.
Oh, no. She's in American Idol. It all comes back to American Idol.
You going to talk about the latest remake, though?
Oh, that's right. We've got this covered, broke the news, or not, that they're looking at doing a Robin Hood remake for Disney Plus, but done in the Disney style where Robin Hood is a fox and so on and so forth, through like kind of like a Lady and the Tramp style live.
It'd still be a musical.
Yeah. So, you know, I was probably 12 before. Well, actually, whenever that Kevin Costner movie came out.
That was like 92?
So I was about 10 when I realized that Robin Hood isn't always a fox. I just thought that was the thing.
I'm guessing there's a lot of kids who grew up, you know, in the 80s and 90s and today. Like all your favorite music stations.
I was going to say, it sounds like that.
You're all playing all the hits from the 80s, 90s, and today. I'm going to guess there's a lot of kids that have that same experience, because that was me as well. My older brother was really into the Kevin Costner Robin Hood and had like a playset, action figures, but they made like a medieval fort playset for the action figures to go in. I remember it had a catapult. And it had like soft good robes on Robin Hood and Little John. So I remember that being my first introduction to, you know, oh, Robin Hood's a story about people and Disney made it about animals, and, you know, having that kind of wool taken over my eyes. But it wasn't long after that that Mel Brooks produced his adaptation, Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Is the Costner one the one with the Bryan Adams song?
I don't know anything about the music, but I remember my older brother owned it on VHS and I was watching it with him, and there came a part where someone's leg was being amputated and there was a lot of blood, and I got queasy and like ran out of the room and probably went and played with my ponies.
So they, I remember like when it came out, the big deal that Sean Connery was at the end. It is the one with the Bryan Adams song, but according to Wikipedia, an excerpt from the main title music was used has been used by Walt Disney Studio Home Entertainment in intros for trailers on DVD and Blu-ray.
For what?
I don't know. I don't know the main title of Robin Hood well enough to tell you.
I also, like, the only Bryan Adams song I can repeat back to you is the Summer of 69 off the top of my head. Is that the song that was in the Kevin Costner Robin Hood?
No, this one's Everything I Do It For You.
Oh, Everything I Do.
I do know that song. I just didn't know that was him.
And then some trivia. Do you remember which movie, have you ever loved a woman or whatever that song is called? Do you know what movie that's in?
Do you mean When a Man Loves a Woman?
I don't know.
No,
not that one. The one that goes, tell me, have you ever really, really, really ever loved a woman?
This is going to be the most expensive.
Yeah, I don't even know the song.
I do know
it if you heard it.
I do know the rousing success he had in Spirit called Get Off My Back, which is about a horse that doesn't want people on its back.
Oh, that's a good song.
That, I've never laughed inappropriately at a theater more than that moment. I will say Bryan Adams did write two songs for Bridge to Terabithia.
I just love that in DreamWorks' spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, a human rides his back for the first time, and it is underscored by a song called Get Off My Back.
Yep, that happened. Any thoughts on Robin Hood, though, as a Disney Plus original movie?
I will say it's happening ahead of schedule as a live-action adaptation than I expected. I figured Robin Hood would be kind of, you know, after they've done the really big ones. After all the Walt Disney Signature Collection titles have been adapted for live action, then we'll get to Aristocats, Robin Hood, those ones.
This is the Disney Plus tier.
It is the Disney Plus tier. I will say I'm curious to see, you know, what the level of computer animation is, because they've said this is a hybrid CG live action. So I'm expecting live action backgrounds-ish, and then mostly it's a CG film. And
so basically dinosaur.
So basically dinosaur, or basically Jungle Cruise, or basically Lion King. But, you know,
Jungle
I'm just,
Book, you mean, right?
I meant Jungle Book, not Jungle Cruise. So, you know, I'm just curious to see, like, how much budget do they give it? Because I will say, Lady and the Tramp, it's a fine live-action adaptation, but there are plenty of moments where the CG versions of the dogs, there's some shots where they're all CG, some shots where, you know, they're just animating a face, where things didn't really look fully cooked.
So, that's our show.
It's got a few bugs in it, but
I wish I could tell you we have a lot of exciting things to talk about next week, but
you never know what's going to happen.
That is true. Words have never been spoken.
We have no clue. Cause in our last episode, at least I, the dumb one, was talking about how they won't change the dates of Sol and Rhea. And here we are.
So, well, I'm sure we'll have something to talk about. We got nothing else to do. Hope everyone is staying home, staying safe, and is well, and getting through this together. I know we joke, but I hope you're able to find some magic somewhere through Disney's offerings, or maybe just going to laughingplace.com and feeling all the blood, sweat, and tears that go into all that website every day. But take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you guys real soon.